My name is John Erling. Today's date is April 27, 2011. Judge West, will you state your full name, please, your date of birth, and your present age?
My name is Lee R. West, Leroy, actually, and then my birth certificate reflects it as Leroy, L-E-R-O-Y, so there's a bit of confusion, but my payroll signature has always been Lee R. West, but I usually go by Lee. I am a senior judge on the Western District of Oklahoma. I was appointed in 1979 by President Jimmy Carter, and I now serve as a senior judge after retiring from an active role. I still have a full staff, and I still carry a reduced workload, but come to the office every day.
Give us your birth date and your present age.
November the 26th, 1929, which makes me 81. I'll be 82 in November.
And where are we recording this interview?
We're recording it in my chambers in the federal courthouse in Oklahoma City.
Where were you born?
A place called Bobtown in Pushmataw County, but it was really just a small part of Clayton, which is pretty small itself, a very small place. Clayton in Pushmataw County, Oklahoma in 1929.
What part of the state is that?
That's far southeast, Little Dixie.
And we'll get into why they call it Little Dixie. Sure. You know. Tell us your mother's name, maiden name, where she was born, where she grew up.
Her name was Nicey Hill. When she married my father, it was West. She was born in Arkansas, near a small town called Blue Ball, Arkansas, which I've been to, but it just barely exists at this time.
She grew up there then?
She grew up and married my father. I can't remember exactly the year. He was born in 1890, and I would guess around 1910 or something like that. He had been married and was divorced, and then she married him after, it was early in the 1900s.
What was your mother like? What was her personality like?
She, you know, everybody thinks their mother was a great person, but my mother was truly a wonderful person. She could barely read or write, went all the way to the third grade, but I don't think completed that. But she was the most protective and loving parent that anyone could have, certainly that I've ever been around. She was sort of the sole moral beacon that we had in our group. My father was a bit of a philanderer and all that sort of thing, a horse trader and a bootlegger. But she was solid, and like I say, every day of my life, I grow just a little more respectful and fond of my mother.
So she gave you the compass in life?
Oh, absolutely. Cope with the most rigorous conditions. We were very poor. They had a saying, we were too poor to paint and too proud to whitewash. I didn't even live in a home that had indoor plumbing until I went to the University of Oklahoma in 1948. We never had very much, but she coped very well to provide. I don't feel deprived at all by coming from a very poor background. My father could neither read nor write, so there was never anything in excess, but we survived amazingly well.
You had brothers and sisters.
I have two sisters who are now deceased, two older sisters. They were wonderful. My slightly older brother, 2 years older, was killed in an automobile accident shortly after I got out of law school, so he's been gone some time. And then I had two half-sisters. My mother and my father had both been previously married, so I had two half-sisters and two half-brothers, all a good bit older than I am.
Weren't you the first one to be born in a house?
I was. My full brothers and sisters were all three born while we were living in what we called a top wagon. It wasn't a schooner. It was just a regular-sized wagon with hoops and a canvas over the top. My dad was an itinerant horse trader, and we just sort of traveled a good part of the year trading and going to wheat harvest or something like that. They did. And all my immediate brothers and sisters were born in that top wagon without the assistance of medical doctor or anything. So I was the privileged one. When I was born in Bobtown, there was a doctor in attendance at my home, Dr. John Lawson. So I've always been accused of being the privileged member of that family.
It's hard to imagine. Only the strong survived back then. You think about these babies born in a top wagon, and now today...
It's almost unbelievable to me, even. My siblings have given me a hard time about that down through the years, as a matter of fact.
Then your father, his full name and where he grew up.
He didn't have a middle name, just Calvin West. And he was born in 1890 in Arkansas, at or near the Pettigean Mountain. It was a pretty good clan. His father was one of seven children that were descendants from Owen West, who is the old pioneer cabin you see on Pettigean Mountain if you go to that state park over there. He never did attend school. He was an animal lover, a horse trader from the beginning, never learned to read or write except he could barely draw his name. As a matter of fact, I have a document in which he used an X to mark his name. He was completely illiterate, but not unintelligent. He was a surprisingly bright fellow for someone who could neither read nor write.
This is an aside because I knew people who lived in Pettigean Mountain, and it was the Davies family. And Papa Ladd Davies was a name. He's since deceased, and his children, David Davies, and another son is the director of tourism today in Arkansas. I don't know if that rings a bell with you at all.
It doesn't particularly, but we have attended a few gatherings in the autumn. They have a gathering at Pettigean Mountain, and my sister and my niece and I and my wife have attended a couple of three of those, and I may have very well met them, but I don't recall them, John.
So your father was a horse trader, cattleman?
Small-time cattleman. You know, he had small herds of cattle from time to time. And then he evolved during the war into primarily bootlegging, selling whiskey and running what we call honky-tonks, and I'm sure you're familiar with that, dance halls. He did not sell moonshine, if at all, very little, because he was very concerned about the federal revenuers. If you bought a federal stamp, you were not prosecuted by the federal government, even if you sold bonded whiskey. But if you did sell moonshine, you could be prosecuted by the feds, and he was very concerned about that because that meant real time. Of course, what he did, selling bonded in bond whiskey, as we call it, he was in pretty constant, well, not pretty constant, very constant violation of the state law. But they had a system in eastern Oklahoma, as you know, of forgiveness and so forth if certain political contributions and regular payments to relatives and so forth took place. So he sort of engaged in that from about the time the war started. World War II, we're talking about, until it was completed.
So you and Barry Switzer have something in common.
Barry and I have a great deal in common, and he's a very good friend of mine.
Barry Switzer, of course, his book, Bootlegger's Boy, and I've interviewed him in this, and he talks a bunch about his father and has tremendous respect about his daddy, as he calls him. Even though he was involved in all this.
Well, I've never quit craving my father's approval, although we had, you know, some pretty serious disagreements, particularly as I got older and supposedly a lot smarter. And he was killed when I was a freshman in the University of Oklahoma in a tornado. And I've often regretted that I didn't do a better job of communicating with him and forgiving him, as my mother was able to do always. She did that a lot better than I did.